Good afternoon and welcome to the introductory call for the River Park Long Short Opportunity Fund. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Please note this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Matt Kelly. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Valerie, and thanks to everyone for joining us this afternoon. We've got to get the legal stuff out of the way here. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, and charges and expenses of the investment carefully before investing. The River Park family of funds is described in prospectus that contains this and other information about the funds. You should carefully read the prospectus before investing. You can obtain a copy of the prospectus on the website at www.riverparkfunds.com or by calling 888-564-4517. River Park Funds are distributed by SEI Investments Distribution Company, which is not affiliated with the advisor or its affiliates. Before we turn it over to the manager, I'm going to turn it over to our CEO, Morty Shaya, for a little introduction.
Thanks, Matt. So this is a very exciting time for River Park Funds as we successfully converted a long-short hedge fund that we've been running as an investment partnership on March 30 into a open-ended mutual fund. So the strategy remains virtually the same as a mutual fund as to the way we were managing it as a hedge fund, a limited partnership. And we're excited to be able to lower the expenses, charge lower advisory fee, offer daily liquidity, and increase transparency to investors. So this is very exciting for us. We're going to really handle this in sort of two different phases. One, we'd like to update you on the performance for the fund for the quarter and a little bit of its historical performance, and then shift into, because this is our introductory conference call as a mutual fund, really take you through the history of the fund, the portfolio managers, the strategy, and then open it up to Q&A. So let me just kick that off a little bit with the performance. So we completed a very strong first quarter. The fund was up 21.05% in the quarter, which compares well to the S&P 500, which was up 9.5%, and actually a loss for the category, the long short category within Morningstar, which was actually, I apologize. The year-to-date number is 9.5% for the S&P 500 and positive 3.26 for the category. So we outperform both the S&P and the category. And the since inception numbers for the fund are annualized performance of 14.3% for the fund, which is almost as strong as the S&P 500, which was up 14.5% annualized. And we exceeded the long short category, which was only up 2.9% per year since its inception in October of 2009. The during the quarter, the gross exposure for the fund averaged 174%. The net exposure averaged 55%. And we completed the, as of the end of March, the gross exposure was taken down to 148%. And the net exposure to 52%, 51.9%. And our long exposure as of the end of the quarter was a little under 100%, 99.8%, and our short position was only 48%. So the metrics in terms of the gross exposure and net exposure since the fund's inception were a low of approximately 100% and a high on the growth side of approximately 200%, and the net exposure was a low of about 40% and a high of in the low 60s for during since inception. With that, let me turn it over to Mitch Rubin, who's River Park's Chief Investment Officer and the Portfolio Manager for the strategy. And I'll ask Mitch to basically take you through, for those of you that don't know him, his history as an investor, the funds that he's managed historically, and then take you through the strategy of the mutual fund.
Okay, thanks, Morty, and thank you all for joining us today. As Morty said, it's an incredibly exciting time for us. As many of you know, some of you may not, the River Park team all worked together at Barron Funds, where we met and worked together for a long time, and the River Park Long Short Opportunity Fund is really a culmination of many of our careers and experiences as investors, which I want to give you a little flavor of, and then walk you through why we think why we're so excited to have this fund available in this format. So my background is I've been in the investment business for a little over 20 years. I was a economics major undergrad at Michigan. I got a law degree at Harvard. I practiced law for a little while before I caught the investing bug, and I became a sell-side analyst at Smith Barney, covering small growth stocks, which is actually where I met Morty and Ron Barron when Barron Funds was still just a small company, and switched over to become a buy-side investor, first an analyst and then a portfolio manager at Barron. The business at Barron, for those of you who don't know, was a relatively small business in the early 90s that became a prominent investment firm focusing on small growth stocks, and I was there for a lot of the time that the firm grew significantly, as we all were. We all worked together there for a long time, which I think is one of the most exciting things about our firm, is that it's a team that's been together for a long time and really chose to come and work together to grow an investment business that we're incredibly excited about. The strategy of the fund is really what we think of as the best of long-term research-driven investing and the best of our skill set. And by that I mean we are very much investors, not traders, as a description of who we are as investors. And that focus on investing is that we believe that from a research-driven approach, as opposed to quantitative or macro or a lot of the other things going on in investing today, that we can gain an information advantage, and in a world that is so focused on the short term and macro and volatility, we can also gain an advantage from patience and a thoughtful approach to valuation to invest in businesses that we think have the potential to rise in value significantly over time. And that advantage comes from doing our own work, independent necessarily of the near-term noise of the day, and focusing very much on businesses that we think have the dimension to be significantly bigger in the future than they are today, predominantly because they're participating in or leading a secular change that is a significant fact in today's society. And by that I mean a lot of the things we're investing in are not debatable topics. You wouldn't, think that the world is going to be less mobile, less global, that baby boomers were going to get any younger, unfortunately. And these are the basic secular trends that we believe are creating investment opportunity in the world. And we've been thinking about and investing in this way for a very long time. And the essence of what we think is our advantage is a willingness to focus on what are the great management teams, what are the great business models, and why does the business have multi-year dimension. But we also come at it, so in that way we're very much growth-focused investors, but we come at it with a strict value orientation in that we believe very strongly that, the key to your long-term returns is buying at a great price. Finding a great business and buying it at a wrong price doesn't lead to great investment returns. So we're very patient, value-oriented growth investors. And that's always been a tagline that we like to use, is a value orientation of growth. By the same token, when you're doing that research and focusing on the long term, you often come across businesses that are the ones being disaggregated or disadvantaged or losing share to the companies that you're excited about. And by working on and researching them, not only does it help you understand and gain conviction in the things you're excited about, but there's often an opportunity when the market doesn't have the same conclusion we do about the future challenges of the business to effectively bet against those businesses with the same body of research. And that's a thought we have had for a long time, even though most of our career at Barron we ran long-only products. To give you a little of the perspective, at Barron I started by being a real estate-focused investor that evolved into doing retail stocks, doing chemical stocks, gaming stocks, pretty much everything we invested in there. I became a co-manager with Ron Barron on the Barron Growth Fund, which was a small cap growth fund. I co-ran when we launched an internet-focused technology fund at the beginning of March in 2000, which, if you think about the timing of that, was not the greatest time in the world to start an internet or tech fund. But was very much a formative part of who we are as investors, in that the experience of that fund struggling at first and then succeeding in a lot of those core investments being businesses that helped us really understand the impact of the internet on society, being a very important part of our background. And then eventually we launched a large cap growth fund at Barron. River Park, our team, and if you look on our website at www.riverparkfunds.com, you'll see that we run a small cap growth fund, a large cap growth fund, and those are traditional long-only funds. And then the conversion of this, the long-short opportunity fund, is very much the conversion of this fund. What makes it so exciting for us, other than we think it really is the core full panoply of what we do as an investment team, it also is those three products is really the essence of what we do as long-term research-driven investors. We believe very strongly that if you're a long-term investor, you have to focus on secular themes and changes, but you don't necessarily uniquely focus on small or big companies. And you shouldn't uniquely focus on only businesses that are growing. You have to truly understand all of the dynamics of an industry to invest with conviction for the long term. And by doing small caps while doing large caps, which most firms don't do, and also doing shorts while doing longs, which most firms don't do, we believe that we really have the advantage of a full cycle of investing. And we use a tagline that we believe in strongly, which is small caps keep us fresh and current, and shorting stocks keeps us skeptical, and being long core large cap growth stocks keeps us current and relevant. And that combination of doing all of that together, we think, is a real advantage for our firm as compared to firms that only focus on small cap or only focus on large cap or only do long-only investing. What that means for us is we are really trying to figure out, based on the long-term changes in society, what are the businesses of tomorrow, the businesses that our kids are going to work at, and how are they going to impact the businesses of today or yesterday, the businesses we work at or that our parents worked at, and where we can find great businesses of tomorrow at great prices, we want to own them. And if that also leads us to find the businesses they are directly disaggregating, that's an amazing opportunity to be long what we think is going to be the winner and short what we think is going to be the loser, and not have any market risk or any risk to that sector in particular. Prime example would be, you know, if you were excited about the internet and excited about internet search, it led you to two conclusions. Google is a really interesting company at its IPO and as it grew, and the newspapers are really at risk. And if you could be long Google and short the newspapers, you'll have no exposure to advertising or GDP or the volatility of how those kinds of stocks are valued, and you'll, over time, make money on both sides. And that's the way we think about long-short, and that's the way we think about our research. And so when you look at our small-cap fund, that is the best smaller growth companies we can find. When you look at, and it is meant to be fully invested long-only in small-cap growth stocks. When you look at our large-cap fund, It is in many ways the graduates of our small cap research and or businesses that, you know, have been large for a while but that we still think have great long-term growth. And if you think about our long short fund, it is the best of both of those funds combined with the businesses we think are most at risk and most misunderstood for that risk in the market with less exposure than the market currently has today. And so it gives us an opportunity both to and be invested in our best long-term ideas, invested against the businesses we think are at risk, but also gives us the opportunity to protect capital in volatile markets where all stocks are trading up or down based on some macro event, which has very much been the case in the market the last several years. And we also come at it from a perspective of having worked together for a while and building our team around what we think the core competencies to do that are. And so the core processes and research effort that we have, we think is also unique and based on our experience of a long time of working together, which is to truly understand the business model, to truly understand what drives the management team who are leading those businesses. And I would say the two things when we think over our history that have been the determinant of great stock performance or poor stock performance is getting focusing on the industries where there's significant change going on and finding the best management teams to decide why and how that company should attack that opportunity. And when you think about, you know, a stock like Priceline, which has had extraordinary returns over time being focused on internet travel, and a stock like Expedia, which has had much less success as a company or stock, even though it's been a growing company, 100% of that differential was the management team's decision-making and capital allocation. And that is uniquely what we focus on. Why is the industry so exciting, and what makes this specific management team and this specific business model differentiated? And we built our team around drawing that conclusion from on-the-ground research. So Conrad Van Tienhoven, who's my partner and co-portfolio manager, on the investment team, who's here with us today. Conrad and I are the analysts and the portfolio managers on all the stocks, and we've built our team around having a quantitative analyst who's a former investigative journalist to truly dig into field-related research to the quality of the company, the quality of the management team, the employees who work there, how they're perceived amongst their co-employees, in the market, by their customers, by their competitors. We have an analyst who does nothing but forensic accounting, building our own proprietary models of what we believe the company will earn or what we believe the risk of the company losing in momentum on earnings is from our own work through the company's 10-Ks and 10-Qs and building our own models. And then we have a research, purely research analyst to truly research globally the secular trends that we think are interesting to determine if they're just interesting trends or if they're truly investable trends that we should allocate time and resources to. And we think that combination, where there's a lot of firms that have grown by having lots and lots of mid-level analysts and an analyst that does energy stocks and an analyst that does retail stocks and whatever, all reporting to a portfolio manager, we really believe this is a much more efficient structure for us as the portfolio managers to truly allocate capital to where we have the highest conviction. What as Morty was saying, what's very exciting about the long short fund becoming a mutual fund is it allows us to talk about what we do in one format with one set of funds and let you, the investor, decide which is the best fit for you. Whereas before, we would market or talk about our small cap fund and our large cap fund in the context of being mutual funds, and then we'd be talking about our hedge fund in the context of a hedge fund with different a whole different fee structure, a corporate structure. So rather, you know, there it's a partnership where you charge a management fee plus a performance fee. There's lockups. There's different tax consideration. There's different minimums. It's an entirely different business structure and business model. And therefore, those investors are trying to understand why you are also doing mutual funds. And your mutual fund investors say, well, we like your small cap or we like your large cap fund, boy, the hedge fund sounds really interesting, but it's not necessarily something they can buy or a fee structure they're willing to pay. And so in this case, we think it kind of democratizes the whole process. We think what we do is differentiated. We're excited about it. Personally, I own my investable assets are only in our funds and are in all three. But having them all under one structure and sold to one client base is very exciting for us because we don't think of it as running three funds. We think of it as running one research product.
The Mitch, before we turn it over to a Q&A period, we got a question earlier today, and maybe that's a good throw-in, and that was basically the performance in the first quarter of 2012 was exceptionally strong, even relative to our historical numbers, and maybe you could sort of address why, how, where, and maybe use this as an opportunity to talk a little bit about tweaking the gross leverage or the leverage long up or down during the quarter. And before you answer that, I just want to, I'm not sure that when I was looking at my screen here, the Morningstar numbers, that I quoted the first quarter numbers before or whether I was quoting the year to date through April 11 or not. So let me just clarify that the fund through March 31, so the first quarter 2012, was up 21.05. That's the institutional class I'm looking at, where the S&P was up with dividends 12.59, and the long-short category, Morningstar's long-short equity category, was up 4.80. So there was dramatic outperformance there, and maybe you could sort of address that.
Yeah, when we describe how we invest, we don't focus on how the S&P is structured or whether we own utility stocks in this or that percentage, but we're happy to compare ourselves to anybody anyone wants to compare us to. The most telling thing I would say about the first quarter of this year as it relates to, you know, the previous 7 or 8 quarters was a lot of the things that we have invested in and have been in the fund happened to gain recognition both on the long and short side in the first quarter, and a lot of that happens in and around earnings periods. And so, you know, generally speaking, the most important period for us is when companies report earnings because it's a full report card that we are able to, and whether the stock trades up or down right on the earnings report is less interesting to us than is our expectation of the future being borne out in the numbers the company is reporting. Sometimes we're excited about what's reported and the market's not and the stocks trade down, and that might not be a great period of performance, but it's a great period for us to invest more when our conviction has increased because we've gotten statistics that are proving our thesis and the stock's gotten cheaper. And then there are times that, you know, the company outperforms, they outperform our numbers, we're excited, and the market reacts positively and the stocks, you know, begin to perform, have good performance. What I would say is there have been periods of time, and we have, you know, all of our historical performance for any of you who want it, where, so if you look back to the fourth quarter of 2009 when we launched the fund, or the first quarter of 2010, we had flattish performance in a strong market, which was a function very much then of several of our bigger ideas and bigger holdings, their stocks not performing well, even though we were excited about their business, and in some cases also some of our shorts in a period where the economy was improving, the markets were doing better, their stocks reacted positively to the market, even though to us we believed the business was at risk or more at risk. And what happened in the first quarter of this year is several of our, you know, most important longs had strong results, and the stocks reacted very positively to that. In particular, you know, the biggest contributor in the quarter was Equinix, which is a data center real estate company that we've been researching for a long time. It's been a top holding in the fund really since inception. Interestingly, not, you know, a year and a half ago, the company had a very sloppy quarter that caused the stock to trade down literally 40% in 2 weeks, and that was the opportunity for us to make it our largest holding. While it was, you know, slowly recovering that performance over the next year and a half, in the last 3 or 4 months, literally the stock went up 60% in reaction to consistently strong results. And here, this is a company that essentially owns large industrial buildings with massive telecom connectivity and massive power and cooling potential for companies to locate their servers and their communication gear to participate in the internet, whether it's for internal enterprise resource software planning, whether it's straight telecommunications handing off internet traffic or telephone traffic, and you know, and then cloud-based applications, both consumer. This is a business we're incredibly excited about. It's a massive secular trend, and it's also a very investable company because at the end of the day, it's a real estate business with occupancy and rent and capital utilization that we can track very consistently. The fact that the stock went up 60% in the first quarter but didn't go up, you know, in the last year and a half is the why. What we do is a long-term focused portfolio, but on any given day when the stocks react, you know, is a little bit of a psychological exercise, which we try to ignore. The other thing was, even though it was a strong market, you know, the S&P up 10% in a quarter is one of the historically strongest quarters, we had several of our stocks that we are short that we believe are in secular decline had very poor results, and their stocks went down a lot. And in particular, you know, we've been short Radio Shack for some time. We've been short Apollo, which is a for-profit education company. We're short First Solar, which is a solar power generation company that we think that entire industry is at risk. We've been short Electronic Arts, which is a video game company, and being short video games is one of our core theses of a business we think is at risk, even though it seems like a forward-thinking future digital business. We actually think that business model is very much at risk. Those stocks were all down substantially in an up quarter, and it kind of highlights what we think of as the real benefit of the Long Short Opportunity Fund, which is we believe we can participate in strong periods in the market even though we have a large short book that may go up if the market's up. We believe that our longs are dramatically undervalued, and even though they may go up a lot, we still, you know, if we believe they're still cheap, we will stay with the investment. And so the first quarter is obviously something we hope to repeat over and over and over again, which is our shorts go down, our longs go up, independent of what the market's doing, which is very different than our small cap and large cap mutual funds, which, you know, we believe they will outperform and go up over time, but they are a bit more dependent upon what the market's doing because they're essentially just long stocks.
Great. In the spirit of just from a compliance perspective, it might be beneficial for us to just lay out our 5 largest contributors to performance and our 5 largest detractors from performance. Do you want to do that, Mitch, or do you want
sure.
me to?
Sure. So our 5 largest performance in the quarter, Equinix, which I began to discuss a little, was our largest contributor and remains our largest holding. Remained our largest holding in the fund at the end of the quarter,
and that contributed about
3%. Apple, we've been working on and invested in Apple since the inception of the fund. And it remains a large holding for the fund. It really is, when you think about many of the themes that we're excited about, Apple remains kind of the by far market share leader. So if you think about mobility between the iPhone, the iPad, the iPod, still a huge franchise. If you think about a modern view of consumer retailing, the combination of the iTunes store, the experience of the Apple Store, the Genius Bar, the ability to check out, the helpfulness of the people working there. If you think about the stresses on the PC industry, and we are short many PC and standard server-oriented companies that we believe are being disaggregated by mobility, by tablets, by smartphones. Apple is still
is taking market share and dramatically growing their PC business. It's also one of the cheapest stocks we've ever owned. It is now paying a dividend, and every year, even though it's been a strong stock, the earnings have outpaced the stock price performance, and it's still one of the cheaper stocks we own. We had an investment in an option strategy on Goldman Sachs. That was our next largest contributor in the quarter. Another example of maybe the opportunities in a long-short strategy that we don't necessarily incorporate in a long-only strategy. We do not believe in owning complex financials. We have a lot of financials that we've invested in the fund, but we very much believe in business services, fee-based companies that generate lots of cash flow without a lot of debt and without having to lend people a lot of money. On the other hand, two of our core themes is globalization and the march of capitalism around the world. And, you know, for all that, you know, has been written about Goldman as the evil empire, they still have the leading franchises in all of the financial services growth businesses in the world. We basically, when Goldman, the stock was hit incredibly hard towards the end of last year, it traded down to a very substantial discount to book value, which we thought was an incredibly oversold condition for the company. And most of the reasons why the stock was down, we believe, were very short-term in nature, and that the company was really not at structural risk. And we were able to create a call spread, essentially an option strategy, to put a small amount of capital at risk, known amount, so by having a premium that we purchased in calls outstanding, on the theory that when the dust settled, Goldman would trade back at least to book value, at the core value of the franchise. The stock had a very strong rebound. That strategy really worked exactly as we expected it to, and was our third largest contributor, with who perform, have good performance. What I would say is there have been periods of time, and we have, you know, all of our historical performance for any of you who want it, where, so if you looked back to the fourth quarter of 2009 when we launched the fund, or the first quarter of 2010, we had flattish performance in a strong market, which was a function very much then of several of our bigger ideas and bigger holdings, their stocks not performing well, even though we were excited about their business, and in some cases also some of our shorts, in a period where the economy was improving, the markets were doing better, their stocks reacted positively to the market, even though to us we believed the business was at risk or more at risk. And what happened in the first quarter of this year is several of our, you know, most important longs had strong results, and the stocks reacted very positively to that. In particular, you know, the biggest contributor in the quarter was Equinix, which is a data center real estate company that we've been researching for a long time. It's been a top holding in the fund really since inception. Interestingly, not, you know, a year and a half ago, the company had a very sloppy quarter that caused the stock to trade down literally 40% in 2 weeks, and that was the opportunity for us to make it our largest holding. While it was, you know, slowly recovering that performance over the next year and a half, in the last 3 or 4 months, literally the stock went up 60% in reaction to consistently strong results. And here, this is a company that essentially owns large industrial buildings with massive telecom connectivity and massive power and cooling potential for companies to locate their servers and their communication gear to participate in the internet, whether it's for internal enterprise resource software planning, whether it's straight telecommunications, handing off internet traffic or telephone traffic, and, you know, and then cloud-based applications, both consumer. This is a business we're incredibly excited about. It's a massive secular trend, and it's also a very investable company, because at the end of the day, it's a real estate business with occupancy and rent and capital utilization that we can track very consistently. The fact that the stock went up 60% in the first quarter but didn't go up you know, in the last year and a half is the why what we do is a long-term focused portfolio, but on any given day when the stocks react, you know, is a little bit of a psychological exercise, which we try to ignore. The other thing was, even though it was a strong market, you know, the S&P up 10% in a quarter is one of the historically strongest quarters, we had several of our stocks that we are short that we believe are in secular decline had very poor results, and their stocks went down a lot. And in particular, you know, we've been short Radio Shack for some time. We've been short Apollo, which is a for-profit education company. We're short First Solar, which is a solar power generation company that we think that entire industry is at risk. We've been short Electronic Arts, which is a video game company, and being short video games is one of our core theses of a business we think is at risk, even though it seems like a forward-thinking future digital business. We actually think that business model is very much at risk. Those stocks were all down substantially in an up quarter, and it kind of highlights what we think of as the real benefit of the Long Short Opportunity Fund, which is we believe we can participate in strong periods in the market even though we have a large short book that may go up if the market's up. We believe that our longs are dramatically undervalued, and even though they may go up a lot, we still, you know, if we believe they're still cheap, we will stay with the investment. And so the first quarter is obviously something we hope to repeat over and over and over again, which is our shorts go down, our longs go up, independent of what the market's doing, which is very different than our small cap and large cap mutual funds, which, you know, we believe they will outperform and go up over time, but they are a bit more dependent upon what the market's doing because they're essentially just long stocks.
Great. The in the spirit of just from a compliance perspective, it might be beneficial for us to just lay out our five largest contributors to performance and our five largest detractors from performance. Do you want to do that, Mitch, or do you want
sure.
me to?
Sure. So our five largest performance in the quarter, Equinix, which I began to discuss a little, was our largest contributor and remains our largest holding. Remained our largest holding in the fund at the end of the quarter,
and that contributed about
three percent. Apple, we've been working on and invested in Apple since the inception of the fund. And it remains a large holding for the fund. It really is, when you think about many of the themes that we're excited about, Apple remains kind of the by far market share leader. So if you think about mobility between the iPhone, the iPad, the iPod, still a huge franchise. If you think about a modern view of consumer retailing, the combination of the iTunes store, the experience of the Apple Store, the Genius Bar, the ability to check out, the helpfulness of the people working there. If you think about the stresses on the PC industry, and we are, you know, we are short many PC and standard server-oriented companies that we are, believe are being disaggregated by mobility, by tablets, by smartphones. Apple is still is taking market share and dramatically growing their PC business. It's also one of the cheapest stocks we've ever owned. It is now paying a dividend, and every year, even though it's been a strong stock, the earnings have outpaced the stock price performance, and it's still one of the cheaper stocks we own. We had an investment in an option strategy on Goldman Sachs. That was our next largest contributor in the quarter. It's another example of maybe the opportunities in a long-short strategy that we don't necessarily incorporate in a long-only strategy. We do not believe in owning complex financials. We have a lot of financials that we've invested in the fund, but we very much believe in business services, fee-based companies that generate lots of cash flow without a lot of debt and without having to lend people a lot of money. On the other hand, two of our core themes is globalization and the march of capitalism around the world. And, you know, for all that, you know, has been written about Goldman as the evil empire, they still have the leading franchises in all of the financial services growth businesses in the world. We basically, when Goldman
stock was hit incredibly hard towards the end of last year. It traded down to a very substantial discount to book value, which we thought was an incredibly oversold condition for the company. And most of the reasons why the stock was down, we believe, were very short-term in nature, and that the company was really not at structural risk. And we were able to create a call spread, essentially an option strategy, to put a small amount of capital at risk, known amount, so by having a premium that we purchased in calls outstanding, on the theory that when the dust settled, Goldman would trade back at least to book value, at the core value of the franchise. The stock had a very strong rebound. That strategy really worked exactly as we expected it to, and was our third largest contributor with almost 2% in the quarter. We have since closed that strategy out. Rentrak, which is a small cap, one of the smaller companies we own. It's a large holding in our small cap fund. I'm actually going to let Conrad speak to Rentrak a little bit, but it was our fourth largest contributor in the quarter, but also is a very good example of the difference between the long-short strategy and just a small cap stock in particular.
Just quickly on Rentrak, the business is an audience measurement business. What we think about a lot, especially in the small cap fund, is disruptive innovation. This is a classic example, company going after a market that the incumbent, in this case Nielsen, has no economic reason to service. And basically that's local markets. To collect data in local markets does not really generate a profit for Nielsen. Rentrak goes after that data using technology around set-top box data. And so they're servicing a market that's under service. We think that they're going to take that technology and move up market with it. The stock basically reacted in the quarter to very strong sales momentum in the local markets. They have over 200 local stations and networks that are now customers, and they count 9 of the top 13 ad agencies. I think it might actually be 10 by now. And so we're very excited about the adoption of Rentrak data as a currency to buy and sell advertising for TV stations. And it was the fourth biggest contributor.
Yeah, it was 1.5%. It's also one of the, I think it's probably as good a case study for the combination of being willing to work on small companies as well as big companies. The movement of advertising dollars following eyeballs to new mediums is something we've been focused on as a meaningful secular trend for a very long time. Internet search being one of the leading companies, and we have a significant Google holding. But when you think about the changes in TV viewership and how the advertising dollars will follow that, knowing exactly what the customer watches, we think, is significantly more interesting to everybody in the advertising world than guessing based on a diary that someone fills out. And that willingness to, that's a thesis we've had for some time. Now, here's a very small 200 million market cap company that most people who run large cap money, or most people who run large hedge funds, don't even know exists. And it's not to say they're necessarily going to be the next Nielsen, but they're truly in a disruptive position to help everybody in the system know exactly what people are watching. And we know that if everybody in the system knows what people are watching, they'll better allocate how they spend their advertising dollars. And that truism of what we watch is changing and the way we measure it isn't appropriate and there is better data out there, is very similar to what we did in saying, your cell phone is not as good as a smartphone. The companies who lead the smartphone revolution will be great investments. And it's a theme we've repeated throughout our careers, which is there's a secular change. Even if there's a small company that's leading that change, we're going to go find it and invest in it. Our next largest contributor in the quarter was Las Vegas Sands. Casino gaming is something we've been researching for a long, long time.
This is another example of, while we had very strong performance in the quarter, that performance was really built on the willingness to buy Las Vegas Sands a year and a half ago when there was an allegation made by one of their managers who was fired in Macau as to whether the company was engaged in inappropriate activities. That while that noise has died down, the stock reacted very negatively to that event, which we, you know, did our own due diligence on, and we're confident that at least the whatever the outcome was, the stock had massively overreacted. In the meantime, the gaming industry in Macau, in Singapore, eventually throughout the rest of the world, is one of the great secular growth industries in lodging and leisure and really in consumerism today. Las Vegas Sands is a company that has had the highest return on capital on the most capital invested in the history of the gaming industry. And we had, and we've been following the company for some time. The opportunity in Macau, which they were the leader of, was followed up by an incredibly successful project in Singapore, which the company was very controversial, and most people thought was not going to be a great return, and it's turned out to be one of the single best return commercial real estate projects in history. And a lot of people still think of it as a Las Vegas-based company, where Las Vegas and the Venetian in Las Vegas, which they own, is only 10% of their cash flow. So the stock reacted very positively to strong numbers and has continued to react strongly because they're opening a second part of their Macau project literally today. Was the opening day of Sands Cotai. So very strong.
So, Mitch, you know, while we had a number of successful shorts, Radio Shack, First Solar, Apollo, Electronic Arts, not surprisingly, in a very strong market, our worst performers in the fund were actually all short positions. Maybe you can just mention those quick.
Yeah, so our five worst performers in the fund, each of which was less than 20 basis points of negative impact in a very strong market, which, you know, while we hate to lose money in anything, we took some solace in. The worst or the biggest detractors on the short side were General Dynamics, which is a large defense contractor. We remain short defense contractors. Federated Investors, which is a investment management company with a very substantial.
These are your worst performers?
Oh, I'm sorry. I should be going from the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay, my bad. I'm reading off an upside down chart, so I apologize for that. our worst performer was Netflix, which actually cost us 100 basis points in the quarter. It was actually our largest contributor on the short side last year. The stock bounced incredibly hard. While we had covered some of the short, we still had some out. We are still short Netflix, but it's a constant reminder to us that when the market has strong performance, sometimes, you know, controversial shorts can be very strong performers, and managing that volatility is important. RealD, which is, again, was a successful short last year that bounced hard in the first quarter, is a leading, probably the leading production company in the television and movie industry to converting or helping create movies and TV shows in 3D. This is another core thesis of ours, that despite all of the advances in digitization and viewing high definition and all of the things that make the movie experience so much better, we've never been a believer that most people want to watch movies in 3D. And there was a lot of hype, continues to be a lot of hype around this company. And it's a core belief of ours that 3D is not a global and a secular growth phenomenon. Similarly, Garmin, which is one of the leading companies for navigation devices, was a strong stock in the quarter that we have a short position in. In some ways, it was, again, a bounce and a reaction to the company has actually executed well in keeping their profit margins high despite pressure on their revenue. We continue to believe that individual navigation devices
are at risk of not being profit generators over time, as you can navigate from almost any device, whether your car is built in, which it's not their core business, is the built in your car, and the handheld devices, which, you know, every smartphone and tablet has a full navigation device on it. And then the gap, which is we have a very core thesis that U.S. big box retail, and especially apparel retail, is at risk for not being able to grow profits and margin in the future. It's a combination of the internet ability to allow you to real-time know exactly the price, competing price of similar goods in any store, whether it's walking into a store with a red laser app on your phone and being able to scan a UPC code and say, wow, I can buy these jeans here, but I can buy the exact same jeans down the street at a discount or on the internet at a discount. Gap is the largest footprint apparel retailer to the mid-market. We think the mid-market consumer, A, doesn't have a ton of discretionary income, B, is being threatened from below by a lot of the deep discounted apparel companies, either on the internet or things, stores like H&M and Century 21, where there's a higher design element for even cheaper clothes. Lots of management turmoil at the Gap, huge square footage footprint. But, you know, again, the company did a little bit better in the quarter. Part of that was a warmer winter than many people thought, so people forward bought their spring clothes, and the stock was strong. And again, we won't necessarily overreact if one of our shorts goes against us if we believe still that the company is at risk in the future of being a much smaller company.
Thanks, Mitch. Valerie, why don't you give instructions to people that might want to call in with any questions, and after you do that, I've got another question that came in earlier in the week that we'll answer while people call in if they have questions.
Okay. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. At this time, we'll pause momentarily to assemble our roster.
Another question that came in earlier this week were the portfolio metrics. And so let me just give you the alpha, the beta, and the R squared on the portfolio, as well as individually on the longs and the shorts, which is actually kind of interesting. So overall, the beta on the portfolio, not surprisingly, has a beta substantially less than 1, given that we've got a net exposure of about 50%. So the beta is only 0.68, and the alpha was a positive 4.2% at annualized rates. More interestingly, though, is that the long book has a beta of 1.17, so slightly above 1, which shouldn't be a surprise given that we invest mostly in growth stocks, and it has an alpha of positive 2.3%. Maybe most interestingly, the short book, though, has a beta of a little over 1, so negative 1.12, but it has a positive alpha of 6.4%. So we're generating strong positive alpha both on the long book. This is monthly data since inception, and strong alpha on the short book as well as overall. So it's for those of you that are into those kinds of statistics, it is kind of interesting. Valerie, are there any calls there?
I'm currently showing no questions.
No questions. Let me then wrap it up real quick. We're very excited about the conversion. It's the first time that we've converted a hedge fund here at River Park. We're putting together fact sheets that are going through compliance right now, and we should have the updated fact sheets over the next week. We've noticed that Morningstar has updated their database with all the historical monthly data, and that happened earlier today. The institutional shares have been put up so far, and the retail shares performance grid will go up shortly. With that, if you have any questions, obviously feel free to reach out to us, and we look forward to a quarterly conference call to update the performance in a month from now. Thanks again.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may